You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
So put your little hand in mine, and together I know there ain't no mountain we can't climb.
Babe.
I got you, babe.
I got you, babe.
You, babe. Oh, man, we're going to have so much fun. Welcome to the 602 Club. I'm just one of the hosts, Matthew Rushing. I'm so excited that Christy is back with me. Christy, how are you doing?
Hey, awesome. So excited to just sit here and sing songs of our youth.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, it's this is going to be really fun. And a big part of that is because we are coming at you on a special day and talking about a special movie, which is Groundhog Day. And so we're so excited to do this. And I was actually surprised that we hadn't already covered this at some point, but we haven't. So we're here to do that for you. But before we dive in to the movie and to Groundhog Day, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the episode. And if you do, we'd really appreciate it if you'd help out the show in a few different ways, whether that's hitting us up with star ratings and reviews over on Apple Podcasts, or, you know, you can always recommend us to friends, whether in person or through social media. And you can follow us on social media. We're on X, Twitter at the 602 Club. We're on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. You can find us online at trek.fm with all of the shows we're doing. And of course, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, as well as our listeners only discussion group that you can join and talk to listeners from all over the world. And plus, you can sponsor us over at Patreon at patreon.com/trekfm. And if you like what we do, make sure that all the shows keep coming to you each and every week. So, Christy, I've got a question for you. I'm kind of just wondering what your first day was in seeing this movie. Obviously, you know, this movie is about repeating many, many days. And so I'm just kind of wondering, do you remember the first day that you saw this movie, or has this just been a movie that's always kind of existed for you?
This is one that I know I did not see in the theater, but I saw not long after it came out at home.
Okay.
Because I was, you know, how old was I? 6 years old when this came out. So it's something that has kind of, I don't remember the first time I saw it, but I know that I saw it so many times that for a while I did not like the song I've Got You Babe because I was so tired of hearing it.
That makes sense.
And what's funny is on the rewatch this time, I went, oh, what was the song on the alarm clock? And I couldn't think of what it was until it played again. And I was like, oh, God, that was it.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Yeah. You know, this is, I would have been old enough to have seen this in the theater, but it's not a movie I saw in the theater. Yet at the same time, it's interesting because, I remember seeing this movie at some point, and it really is one of those movies to where I kind of just can't remember when I saw it. I'm pretty sure that it was probably at some point late 90s as I was really just getting into watching a lot of movies around 93, 94. I started going back to the movies as well. You know, people know I grew up in a pretty conservative household, and there's a time that I wasn't even going to movies. And then the first movie back that my sister and I saw in the theater was The Lion King.
Mm.
And, you know, after that, I just really got into movies. And so, you know, especially just at that point, I started seeing a bunch of movies that I'd never seen before. And I'm pretty sure that Groundhog Day kind of fell in during that time period because it was a movie that friends of mine had seen, but I hadn't. And so it was like, okay, I need to see that. And so I honestly just, though, can't remember, like, the circumstances or anything like that. But I think the beauty of that is that, you know, this is one of those movies where I feel like for many people, it is just kind of one of those, oh, this has always existed for them, you know? And and so, and in some ways I can't, you know, it had been a long time since I had seen it. And then a few weeks ago, before we were even going to watch it for the podcast, or probably about a month ago, my wife and I do this thing where one of us grabs three movies and the other one picks. Mm. And so I did that, and she picked this one, and we watched it. And man, I just, you know, it was one of those things where you're watching it, and you're almost like reliving the first time again because it's been so long since you've seen it.
Yeah.
That was a really fun experience. And then, of course, you know, watching it again for the podcast. And so I wanted to ask you about this, though, because, you know, this movie is so synonymous with Bill Murray. You know, it's kind of like any of the other movies that he was in. I feel like, you know, you think of like Caddyshack, Bill Murray, you think of Stripes, you think of Bill Murray, you know, you think of all these movies, you think of Bill Murray because it was just like he became a person who defined a type of film. And yet, the most interesting thing about this is the first choice for this movie was actually Tom Hanks.
Which blows your mind.
Right?
Because, I mean, it feels like it's not even written for an actor like Tom Hanks. And then when you read why he didn't take the role, you get it. Because, I mean, if you think about like quintessential Tom Hanks, the same way you think about Bill Murray, he is the good guy. 99% of the time, he's just that person that plays that kind of role that always makes you feel good about life. You know, I always think of You've Got a Friend in Me with Tom Hanks, Forrest Gump, all of those things. And so thinking about him playing this role does not make any logical sense to me.
I mean, I can, you know, it's not like Tom Hanks could not have done it.
Right. He's got the ability.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think you're right. Like, it doesn't seem like the right kind of fit, because you would be looking for him to make the turn the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's interesting because Michael Keaton actually turned down the role, and because he said he just didn't really kind of understand the film. And That's an interesting choice, because I feel like Michael Keaton could absolutely have done this, but I also almost feel like Michael Keaton at that point would have come off even meaner in a way than Bill Murray does, and in a way that like makes you want to turn off to the character more than Bill Murray does. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that Bill Murray does ride that fine line of still having something likable about him, even though he can play a jerk really well. I think back to Meatballs was also one of my favorite movies. And there were scenes in that movie where I didn't particularly like him because I felt like he was too aggressive with his crush. And then here as well, I think that, you know, the scenes where he really pisses off Rita, you think, man, could he get any lower, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that you need somebody in this role in particular that does just stand on that fence between still having something likable, but being able to play someone so frustrating. And I think Keaton would have been able to do it, but still, again, just, I don't know, felt more too serious. I think that for what Ramis wanted here with it to have some more comedy, that Keaton wouldn't pull it off as well as Murray.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. I think you're absolutely right in that. And, you know, another person that one of the writers there wanted was Kevin Kline, which, you know, I think Kevin Kline actually would have done a good job with this as well. I think Kevin Kline has the acting chops to be able to do it. He also kind of, I think in many ways, he has some of the same abilities as Bill Murray to kind of be somebody who's a lovable jerk. Like, you know, mm-hmm. you don't like him, but, you know, he can do that. But, I think the thing about Bill Murray in the movie is the way in which he slowly, methodically kind of makes the turn throughout the film. And I think one of the things is that it's his portrayal that makes it believable that he finally starts to get it. And, you know, and he does just such a great job of at the beginning of the movie just being so incredibly kind of snarky and hateful. And yet he does it in a way that doesn't completely turn you off to him as a character.
Like he's still relatable.
Yes, yes. And I think maybe there's a good possibility that so many of us have kind of fallen into that trap at some point in our lives where, you know, we've been so focused on ourselves that we kind of just become a real jerk to everybody around us, right? And I think we can kind of almost feel that. And yet, then he makes the change, and there's just... It's not just that he becomes less unlikable to be more likable. It's almost as if his character finds an innocence by the end of the film, which is very interesting. Like I was realizing that as I was watching the movie again for when we were going to, you know, do this podcast. And having seen it so quickly in succession here, I was just really astounded that there's like this really jaded nature to this character at the beginning of the movie. But by the end of the movie, there's almost as if he's gained an innocence back by regaining his humanity, which it's so effortless for him, it seems like, to be able to pull that off, which I just don't know if anybody else could have done that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm with you 100% because I think of even there's times that you look at him, his expression, and you don't want to fully believe what he's saying in the scene. I'm thinking in particular when he keeps asking if he can buy Rita a drink. But you can see over the times that he does it by the third or fourth time that he's realizing, okay, maybe there's something about my delivery that's insincere. And so it's not only I'm learning more about her, but also that I actually care about it and I'm not just memorizing things. And so he gets that look that's kind right. of a glimmer in his eye that I think he brings that nobody else does, where he's still got charm about him.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with you completely. I think... He also, you know, just at the very end of the movie, you know, when they walk out onto the steps and it's the beautiful snowy scene and, you know, he's like, let's move here, you know, mm-hmm. and there's this, everything wrapped up into that is the film and what he's gone through and that, you know, even though for everybody else, it's only a day, for him, it's been who knows how long, mm-hmm. right? And so in that, he's learned kind of all of the things that one needs to learn to really make life worth living. And that scene of like him just being, let's live here. There's just such a purity to it that he doesn't want to let go of all that he's learned, which is just kind of great. And again, it's It's his portrayal. And not only that, but I also think, one, you know, for me, one of the most moving things that he does is it's as he's making that turn, and it's when he's trying to save the old man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so incredibly heartbreaking, right? Because he's been able to do all of these other good things, and this is a thing that he can't actually make happen, even with all the times that he has tried. And so there's that also that lesson of the inevitability of something like death that we can't change, right? Mm-hmm. And the way he does that, it's so beautiful. It's so well played. And so again, it's like, it's one of those things where, yes, an actor becomes so incredibly melded into that character. The thought that somebody else would have played them just doesn't seem right.
Yes, for sure.
You know, talking about him, one of the things that really, especially with the rewatches here of this movie recently, that has really stuck with me, and I think have really made this something where this will be a movie that I will actually begin to watch more often. And a big part of that is this whole idea of these immortal lessons that he learns. You know, the whole thing about this movie is that he becomes immortal, but only for one day.
Mm-hmm.
And so to kind of watch how the script, you know, takes him through all the stages of grief, of, you know, denial and anger and bargaining, depression, and then finally acceptance is really kind of beautiful, because of course the whole move is something that we've talked about so many times on this show together, where you have this self-absorbed jerk who finds himself realizing that the best life that we can live is not one focused on ourselves, but it's actually focused on other people. And by doing that, the joy that it brings changes everything. And, those lessons to watch him learn in all of these different stages was incredible. And it's one of those things where it's very interesting to me, because, you know, nobody behind this film, watching some of the extras, I was struck by that nobody behind this film is specifically religious. And yet a lot of these messages are things to which people end up finding in something like religion. Mm-hmm. And it's the lessons that help they learn from, say, something like Christianity or something like that, which help them realize, oh, I'm not all that's here. I'm not all that matters. And maybe my life is better lived in serving, you know, not just myself, but those around me. And I absolutely adore this movie for that.
Yeah, I think this definitely is a movie where, on the one hand, you could watch it and think, okay, it's all about the one main lesson that life is not about yourself, it's about everyone else around you. But I think that the more you see this movie, the more individual lessons you pick up, which I think mm-hmm. is what's so That's great a great about point. It, that it's got all these layers to it, that, like you said, it's going through all those stages of grief. That totally makes sense if you picture yourself being stuck in an endless loop of the same day. You'd mm-hmm. be trying to get out of yeah. it and then finally accept mm-hmm. it and, you know, whatever. But it's not only that he learns how to be selfless, but that he also learns what gives you purpose in life. That it maybe mm-hmm. it isn't yeah. just life sucks and then you die.
mm.
And he didn't have that when he first started. You know, I think he really was so absorbed in climbing the ladder at work that mm-hmm. everything else was colored with this shade of gray for him and just boring and pointless.
Yeah.
And I think also he gets new perspective because, like you said, you know, by the end, he's saying, let's move here, about a town that initially he, you know, was totally poo-pooing as this podunk place in the middle of nowhere. I don't know why they're making me go. Everybody else gets to do all these big, fancy assignments, and I get the news story about a groundhog.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end, he's thinking, I want to live here. That's a big difference.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree with you more, and I keep saying that, but I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, as you're watching the film, I absolutely love that, you know, he begins to see time as this commodity, and you can spend your most precious commodity on yourself, but that leaves you alone. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the beauty of this movie is watching him be this person who is utterly alone, right? And he desires to kind of have somebody. And yet he treats everybody else like this kind of commodity, this thing to be won, this prize to have. Right. Right?
Like, I need Instead somebody. Of a way, it's not, I need it, you.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think it even goes further than that in the sense that we can treat somebody as some kind of prize to be won that then we kind of like own, instead of it being something to where I give myself to you, you give yourself to me, we become a partnership, and the idea of like community, right? I mean, the town here becomes a community because he gives himself to people, right, by serving them, and they give themselves back to him. In joy and appreciation for him and his kindness and his goodness and all of those things. And it's so beautiful because as he begins to kind of better himself, and it becomes not about trying to, again, win Rita as some kind of prize, but it really begins to be about how can I bless other people with the time that I've been given, you know? And I think that that's really beautiful. You know, there's a line in Star Trek Generations where Picard is talking to Riker and he talks about, he likes to see time as a companion, because this moment will never come again. And so what we do with each moment that we've been given matters because that's the only moments that we have again. Mm-hmm. And again, seeing life is kind of like this idea of that time is your most precious commodity. How we spend that, we can do it for the betterment of others, which actually then enriches ourselves in ways we could have not thought possible. Or we can do it in a way that we hoard things, you know, through greed, and it leaves us alone and frightened and scared, or just depressed and wanting to die, you know, which is, I think, in some ways, you know, when we have that point, you know, here for Phil of depression, right? It really, it's when he's tried everything to get what he wants from other people without actually really giving of himself, realizes that can't happen. And then he's like, this is just not worth it. Life's not worth living.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I find that incredibly interesting. And I think that the beauty of this movie is that I think it really does speak to us on a level that goes way beyond the film itself, which is actually something that I you know, it was unintended by the creators. And yet what they've created is something that's so in line with the truth of life. I think that's why this movie continues to be something, you know, that people just respond to, you know?
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, it's funny. While you were saying that, I even thought about how by the end, it's almost like there's this other character of almost like God, or that like the audience is looking through what you would think is maybe God's perspective of the situation to me, because it's almost like the whole time he was trying to figure out the answer to get out of this looping day.
Mm-hmm.
And God was there saying, wrong answer, wrong answer, wrong answer.
Yeah.
And then by the end, it's like he stopped trying to figure out the problem and was just figuring it out on his own. You know what I mean? Like not actively just trying to get through it to get the day to stop.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it becomes is that this is this is clearly, if this is the day that I'm going to live over and over again, then my goal is to live this day as selflessly as possible for other people, to bless them, to make their lives better in this one day. And the beauty is, you know, especially as we see him play out that last day, before he wakes up and everything is different. The beauty is that he truly does that,
mm-hmm.
right? And like, I think I love what you said. It's almost like there's something that keeps hitting the pause button on him and being like, nope, rewind. Yep.
Try again.
Rewind, you know, try again. And that's really, that is a beautiful thing, you know, and I, again, I do think that that's why people just continue to respond to this movie. And one of the reasons why I think it ends up hitting really hard, I mean, you know, I find, to go back to one of, I think, the most moving scenes is when he's trying to revive the old man who's died, and it's just so painful because that lesson of there being things that we can't do, even with all of the time and the money and care that we have, there are things to which we don't have any control over, you know, and that's another lesson to learn. And mm-hmm. so, and it's a hard one to learn, and yet the beauty is the lesson there is, it's just because I might not be able to do anything, it doesn't mean I don't try.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we see with him is like, even when he realizes that he can't actually do anything, he still does it.
Yeah.
And then he leaves the old man to have not died alone. And to have had maybe the best day he's had in who knows how long.
Right.
And I think there's something that's also an incredibly beautiful lesson.
Yeah, I think that scene and one other are the most powerful points in the whole movie. And the other one I'm thinking of is at the very end, the quote that really stuck with me was when he looks over at Rita and says, "Is there anything I can do for you today?" Because that's a whole different way of looking at your partnership with someone in a relationship than I would say probably most people usually do, which is sad, but that it's not about what someone else can give you. That sometimes it's just saying, what can I do for you? And that is such a beautiful and selfless way of treating someone and truly showing them love. Mm-hmm. That he never would have done before.
Yes. And what it shows in that moment is that he had truly learned all of the lessons, which is that our response to another person is not what can you do for me, but what can I do for you?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think you're right on target there. And that's what makes the movie, you know, incredibly beautiful. And so I wanted to ask you about the rest of the cast, because the most interesting part about the cast in many ways is just how much they really just revolve around Bill Murray. And yet I do think that they're incredibly important to the film. And, you know, it's been a long time since I've really seen Andie MacDowell in anything. And so going back and watching her in this movie, I love how she's the antithesis to Phil at the beginning of this film.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, she becomes the picture of what he's going to become. And she's so good in this movie. She's so likable. She's so wonderful. You know, I mean, and you know, the way she plays the role, I love it too, because you're so kind of like frustrated with Phil for treating her so badly when she's one of the most incredibly kind people ever. And we see that throughout the entire movie, just the way in which she interacts with everyone, the joy she has in the job she does, and the joy she's trying to bring to everybody around her by just kind of looking at all of the good things in life and all, instead of all the things maybe she doesn't have. And I love that. I love her portrayal and I love her performance. And she's just so incredibly kind of, I don't know, I don't know if this is the right word to say, but like, she's just adorable in this movie.
Yeah. Oh, and I think you hit the nail on the head. She is written as that quintessential girl next door. She's very down to earth and warm and friendly and joyful, even about little things. And so that's what makes you adore her so much. And also, I will say, like, just the two of them as actors had great chemistry.
Yeah,
and then
I agree.
Her portrayal of Rita, I think she's so, it just feels very comfortable in the role. And like you said, just the complete opposite of him as a character of Phil, showing, I think she really shines best in some of the scenes where he thinks that he's figured her out and then gets something wrong. And just the look on her face is like that disappointment and look away. And you're like, oh, nope. He stepped in it now. He's got to backtrack and try again.
Mm-hmm.
She's so good.
Well, and I think the other thing that makes her kind of great in the role is the way in which, you know, she continually figures out that this is a man who, this is a man who is putting it on just to try and, you know, get with her.
Mm-hmm.
And that she always figures that out until he's not. And I think that's the other thing that just kind of makes her incredibly lovable in this movie, is that as kind as she is and all of those things, she's not gullible. She's not an idiot.
Right.
You know? And I think there's something really beautiful about that too,
mm-hmm.
right? That just because one is kind doesn't make them somebody that can be a pushover and gets taken advantage of.
Yeah.
Right? And so I love that about that. And on top of that, you know, I think, you know, we've got Chris Elliott, who's the other kind of really main character here as the cameraman. And I really enjoyed, especially as I was watching this a couple of times very closely together, I noticed how, you know, he's able to recognize that Phil isn't a great guy. You know, totally full of himself, a jerk. But what I find really interesting is he can't realize that he's not too dissimilar to Phil. He's just less overt about it,
mm-hmm.
which that's something that I find really interesting.
And that he also changes by the end because of the way Phil treats him.
Yes.
It's almost like they both go through a character makeover because he is definitely, I'm glad you mentioned that, Larry does start out also as very cynical and, listen, I'm here to do my job. I hold the camera, whatever. And that they both kind of are a total buzzkill for Rita, who's so, you know, happy to be there and to check out this festival and everything. So, I like him. And I, you know, it's funny because I'm used to seeing Chris Elliott in particular as always the funny guy. So it was odd seeing him in this again and not remembering that he was a little bit more serious in this movie. I was like constantly waiting for him to give a punchline. So that was different.
Yeah, I agree.
But he does it well.
Yeah, he really pulls it together. And like you said, he absolutely plays it very cool. He does not go over the top. You know, he really does rein himself in, you know, in a way that, like you mentioned, you wouldn't necessarily expect. And yet, I think he does a really good job in that. And so, Stephen Tobolowsky playing Ned, I mean, really, he's just there to be kind of comic relief. And my goodness, I kind of love that they just allowed him to go completely over the top and kind of just completely crazy, because I think it really, really works for the movie to have this type of character, you know, and that moment where Phil's like, wherever you're going, can I go with you? And just, you know, because he's been so over the top, then, you know, to have Phil make that request and him be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's great. You know, mm-hmm. It makes all of that work. So what fun casting, and what I think, you know, as the director, Ramos is able to do. I mean, he knows exactly how far to let the actors kind of go with their portrayal.
Yeah. And, you know, Steven is definitely somebody that's good at this kind of thing. And although he doesn't have a ton to do, it is funny. And I think more than anything, because it's so relatable, we've all been there where there's somebody that definitely remembers you and you're like, I have no idea who you are, but I'm going to play along. And I love that they even have yes. Phil do that later to the random lady in the town, Nancy.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
like, Nancy, Mrs. Walsh's English class. Yes. And she's like, sure.
It's so awful. Yes.
So
him. Yeah. 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 Well, I mean, that's good. You know, that's the point for the movie, in the sense that we really do kind of make Phil just an incredibly unlikable person. And they do a good job of that in many different ways. And, in doing that, then the redemption, I think, means all the more. And so, I'm really interested to ask you about this, because one of the things that I didn't realize about the film until I was watching the extras was the fact that they wanted the town to be a character, and that they didn't actually film this in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Say that three times fast. And the reason is because where they actually hold the ceremony with Punxsutawney Phil is in a field away from the center of town. And they really wanted the town to be a center, so they went to this place called Woodstock, Illinois, and that's where most of the film is actually filmed. And I wanted to ask you about that, because do you think they made the right choice? Would this have worked if it hadn't kind of been in the center of a town where all of the action takes place?
I think they were right to do it this way, because the first thing I think of is my favorite TV show ever, Gilmore Girls. And the reason why people still love it so much is that small town feel, and having the town square and the gazebo and the lights and things like that be a major part of what makes it so lovable and comfortable. And so I think you needed that here, because it is supposed to feel like this little town where they have this groundhog that they revere so much. And with a name like Punxsutawney, it does feel like that just from the name. So I think that it was the right decision, but I do feel a little bit bad for the real Punxsutawney for not getting to be in the movie, even though it's talked about.
Yeah, no, I actually think that you're just right on. And I think the filmmakers understood what they needed was they needed a place where all of this action could take place. And it kind of felt like, you know, yes, you walked into the town square and you did the big thing. And then, you know, you could just immediately go to the diner or to the hotel or to any of these other places. And it didn't feel like you had to spend a lot of time with travel
right.
for the characters. You know, everything was in with walking distance, which I think really then ends up helping this feel the way that the movie feels. And I think it absolutely works. And, you know, I think you made a great point of bringing in the idea of something like Gilmore Girls, where the town itself is as much a part of the show as the rest of the characters are. Mm-hmm. It is a character. And it almost reminds me of, again, to kind of bring up a Star Trek reference. I think, you know, Star Trek, the ships become a character,
yeah,
as much as the characters do. And so in this movie, I think that's very much what they needed. They needed a town to feel like a character. And there's something, I think, that, you know, it's so Americana, this tiny, you know, little hamlet where people can just kind of, you know, walk to the town square from the local diner or the coffee shop or, you know, the hotel they're staying in and all that kind of stuff. And it feels right.
Well, and even the mood music, I just have to add, because I'm suddenly remembering.
Yes.
Was it the Pennsylvania polka?
Yes, every time. Every time.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, don't you
polka.
Want to do it? Yeah, exactly. We've talked a little bit about this, I think. But anytime you go back to a film like this, and you may have fond memories of it, and then you return to it. I do think the question of, like, does the movie hold up comes up in my mind. Because anytime I'm kind of rewatching a movie I liked when I was younger, there's always fear, maybe is the right word. But that, like, oh, is this going to feel the same now that I'm in a different place in life? And so for you, do you feel like this movie ends up holding up?
It does for me, honestly. And it's funny because I hadn't thought about it in a while. So I'm glad that you wanted to rewatch it and talk about it on the show. But it's definitely one that, because of all of these other elements to it, is more timeless, even though it can look somewhat dated due to the wardrobe and the hairstyles and stuff. The core of what it is isn't set in any particular era, and so that works so well for this to be able to hold up. Obviously something like Mission Impossible 2, but here it's always going to be relatable, and so I think that's why it still works. Did you feel the same way?
I absolutely feel the same way. I think that not only does this movie hold up, but it becomes one of those things. And I think part of that is that the older you are, the more that this type of film, I think, can resonate with you, because you have a lot more experience, right? And a lot of these lessons that Phil is having to learn are lessons that you're in the process of learning, you've learned before, or you're kind of having to kind of relearn, right? You know, our lives as human beings are one, I think, of perpetual motion towards either becoming less self-absorbed jerks and more selfless, or becoming more self-absorbed. And so the beauty of this type of film is that it really does help us to be reminded in a fun way of what's really important in life. And, you know, I think in some ways this movie, it holds up maybe even better than when I saw it when I was younger because of that. And kind of in the same way, and that a movie that I didn't like as a kid that now I love hit me in a different way because life had changed, and that same thing had happened with E.T. My life is different and my experiences are different from when I saw it the first time. I didn't like it before, but now I like it. This is a movie where it's like, I liked it before, but now I actually really like this movie. Like, it's, I have much stronger feelings for this movie than I did before, which will be interesting then to see what you are going to rate Groundhog Day.
So it's just one of those that it's so nostalgic and meaningful that there's really not much that you can do to take off points for it. And I mean, I think it also is one of those that thankfully spoke well for itself with the box office numbers, even from when it first came out. I was surprised how well it did. So, I mean, I was just overjoyed to get to see it again and have that take me back to my childhood again, and also feel like I've learned some new things from it. So I give this a 4 out of 5 Punxsutawney Phils biting the steering wheel trying to not to drive off a cliff.
Oh, so good.
Because there's just some scenes like that that it's not like incredibly funny, but it's cute.
Yes,
and then finding out that that groundhog actually bit Bill Murray twice.
Yes, that was funny.
I felt a little sorry for Bill.
Oh, man. Goodness, I'm right there with you. I mean, this is 5 stars.
Okay.
This is 5 Punxsutawney fills for me. I think this is one of those... It's the movie is just kind of so pure. It's so enjoyable. Mm-hmm. It's something that you can just legitimately watch anytime. But it also leaves you feeling so full of life in such a great way. You know, it's not heavy-handed in the sense that you feel like you're getting knocked over the head with the message.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the message does leave you bowled over, if that makes any sense. And the way it does it is just so wonderful and kind of like soothing. It lulls you into being reminded the goodness of what life can be, you know, when we don't just live life for ourselves, but we're willing to live life for other people, to insert ourselves into a community and become a part of that in a way that is indispensable because we actually love other people. And there's something so beautiful about this movie. So yes, an absolute classic. 5 stars. Christy, if anybody wanted to catch up with you, talk to you more about Groundhog Day or maybe what they're doing for Groundhog Day today, since this show will be releasing then, where can they find you?
Yes. And please do, by the way, because that would be great to actually let's talk about it again. I feel like I haven't even talked about the Groundhog Day observance in a long time. So I'm on Instagram, X, and Instagram and X at Bespin Bell, and on Facebook and in the Babel Conference on Facebook. And then I have a finished show that I did with my friends Amanda and Teresa called Sabers and Spells. If you want to check that out, just talking about other geek stuff outside of this show. But what about you?
Well, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here on the network, doing a lot of different shows outside the 602 Club with Star Trek, a lot of the rewatches that Chris and I are doing. We're having so much fun. We've got some surprises in store coming up here as we start another rewatch. Hint, hint. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with 2 shows. One is called Owl Post, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, 1 chapter at a time, and doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills, so we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But thank you so much for joining us.
And y'all come back now, you hear?